So welcome to class two of the four class introduction to mindfulness meditation series. For many of you, I know this is a refresher, and for some people are brand new. So I'm going to be approaching it from that and just trying to weave things in for the more experienced as well. So just a really brief review of what we did last time. Last time I kind of set the stage mentioning the root of mindfulness meditation, which is Buddhism, the Buddhist teachings, and that there are multiple what we call anchors of attention or home bases of attention. So breathing is the one that we primarily worked with last week. And as came up last week, breathing doesn't always work for everyone. So the invitation is, if it doesn't work for you, to focus on an alternate anchor of attention, object of attention. Often that's the whole body sensations or sounds. Those are the two that we covered last week briefly, and we'll go more into both of those this week. So mindfulness meditation is about being aware of what's happening while it's happening in a non-judgmental way. That sounds really simple. It is. It's not necessarily easy, right? Stuff gets in the way. Have you noticed? Yeah. So a lot of this class is about working with the basics, because the practice, when we talk about practice, meditation is a practice just like learning to drive or practicing playing a musical instrument. And like any practice, we get better with time. It gets stronger with time. This is also true of like working out. It's almost like our attention is a muscle that can be trained to come back to the present moment. So we are going to continue that mental training tonight. And tonight, it will be a little bit more focused on mindfulness of the body as a key foundation for awareness practice, mindfulness practice. Last week, it was mostly about the breathing in the body. This week, we're expanding it outwards to take in the profound value of felt sense experience. This moment, now, what's happening in this moment? And I'll talk about a few things here. The input that comes into our senses, right? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. That's one form of mindfulness that is profoundly useful in daily life, or if we need to say move, drive a car, walk, talk to a human being, right? The other kind is called interoception or interoception. And that is awareness of what's happening within our bodies. And that's what seated, formal mindfulness meditation focuses more on. It develops an incredible capacity for attuning to present moment experience. And part of the reason it does that, to put it in really simple language, our minds can go anywhere, right? Past, present, future, here, there, yon, total fantasy, virtual reality, you name it. Our bodies are always here, always. So tuning into the body is a shortcut, a touch point, an anchor to being present. A really powerful foundation. Even like stage actors work with their bodies to develop presence. And they're not necessarily trying to cultivate mindfulness. I've met some people who are really into it, and they end up finding mindfulness anyway through the back door, through cultivating this presence. And many of us find the capacity for presence, however it shows up, to be an incredible ally in life. less likely to get buffeted, knocked around by what's happening when I can come back to center here. So the Buddha, at one point in his life, I think this was near the end of his life, he lived for quite a long time for ancient India, was asked about what kind of refuge his disciples should go to after he died. And one of the main refuges he gave was mindfulness of the body. It's that powerful. It's that meaningful. As a touch point, it doesn't mean not to cultivate anything else, of course, but we can become refuges for ourselves by cultivating this capacity. So I'll walk through some examples of the internal and external mindfulness, in part because we're asking you, I'm asking you in this class, not just to sit, hopefully every day if you can, but also to notice when you're aware in your life. So the external mindfulness is, for example, right now, noticing your feet on the floor or your butt on the chair or cushion or whatever surface you're on. Your hands, what are they touching? It's also noticing internally things like solidity, hardness, heaviness, lightness. That's one realm. So tactile. Oomph, weight, right? Another area is noticing wetness or dryness. That could be like my palms and hands are a teeny bit sweaty. I don't feel nervous at all, but I think maybe my nervous system's a little keyed up from all this talking. Or the saliva in your mouth. Or if your eyes are moist or dry, just noticing that. And internally, if you turn inwards, you might notice the sense of the pulsing, tingling movement of the blood in your veins or of the air in your body. Notice it. All of these ways are grounding. Grounding in the moment. Another touch point in the senses, in the body, is warmth or coolness. You know, women of a certain age, and I'm rapidly approaching it, experience hot flashes, right? It can be intense. All of us experience moments of heat or chills. It can be pleasant or unpleasant, depending on what it is and how we're relating to it. You know, really warm sun on a brisk, cold fall day feels great, right? Or a cool breeze on a really warm summer day. Really nice. So the invitation to tune into these things, maybe even right now, noticing the feeling, there's fans going in this room, and maybe air circulation where you are, noticing, what's the contact between your skin and the air like right now? It's so simple. There's also noticing overall tension or relaxation, kind of the gestalt of your whole body. So just checking in. Tension, relaxation, anxiety, calm. What's present right now? What's present? The body is not just a touch point into the present moment. It's a barometer. Our breath is a barometer for how we're doing. There are times where I have noticed my emotional state after I've noticed my heart is pounding or my breath has moved up into my chest, right? Or relaxation. So just to check in, it's a very reliable barometer of where you're at. It's also, our bodies have Integrity. Integrity of your whole body. I like to call it the integrity of your skin, right? That protection, that layer between us and the rest of the world. To notice and appreciate that boundary. It's literally what holds life itself, separate from all the other life forms around us, right? There's an alternate. A body is an alternate, an ally also in noticing and getting space from mental commentary, self-criticism, mental chatter, all that kind of stuff. So again, body is always here and now, right? So there's a couple of ways to think about this, and I'm going to use two closely related analogies, I guess. One is, any of you watch TV? Sometimes, occasionally, maybe. Okay. It's the difference between, say, watching a football game with the sound on and being completely pulled in, or hitting the mute button and watching the play unfold. Mindfulness of the body gives just a little distance from what's unfolding. It doesn't mean we're not seeing it. It means we're seeing it differently. Seeing it differently, right? So second TV analogy. If I am glued to some story in my mind, and most of us are much of the time, right? Right. It can be helpful to imagine the mind of like a TV screen or a movie screen. And most of us experience that. I mean, our whole bodies are involved, of course, but most of us experience it somewhere up here, right? So imagine that's your TV room. Mindfulness of the body is an invitation to expand into the rest of the house. The TV can still be on, but you can walk into the kitchen or the bedroom or even outside across the street and see it through the window. It doesn't mean thoughts aren't happening. It's another place to go to see how they're happening and how we relate to it. It's an invitation to unfold into a bigger, calmer, more present space. So that was a lot of words that I just said. But in short, our bodies are always here, always now, and they're an alternate to discursive chatter. One of my teachers says, yada, 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 blah, 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 yada, blah. You know, it's like that in our heads sometimes, right? This is the capacity to step back. Step into this moment. Okay, so there we go with that. I just want to offer a few minutes here if you have any questions about what I just said, or questions, those of you who were here last week, from last week, now is a great time to ask them. Manny's got the mic, so if you're in the room, we just ask you to use it so our Zoom friends can hear. Maybe, though, I'll start with our Zoom cohort. Anybody have a question or a comment from who's present? You can just raise your hand if you if your video is on. And if you feel shy and you're on Zoom, you can also, well, I was going to say you could chat me privately, but everyone's going to see your chat. So that won't work. Please. But if you prefer not to speak, you're welcome to chat your question. Anybody in the room have a question or a comment? Or I'd love to hear about your experience from this past week. Did you manage to practice most days? How was it if you did? And what happened? Isn't right? I liked those words a lot. Do you mean the word that what I just talked about just now? Okay, great. Thank you. And then I hear asterisks last week, rather. I guess that was about your name. Anybody else? Comments or questions? Andrew, hi.
Hi, I'm in public, so I've been off the whole time, but I've been listening and I really like them. I've tried to practice, and I found that for me as a beginner, about 15 minutes was about as much as I could take. And I set myself up in a place that was not perfectly silent, but it had, I guess, whitish noise. And I still struggled a lot with my mental narrative and self-talk. And it was that reminder to anchor myself back to a certain sensation or breath or whatever. But it was hard, really. I had to continually come back, come back, come back. And so I wonder if there is a trick for staying there longer, or some tips maybe. That's all.
Thank you for the question. Can I ask a little bit more about how you were practicing before I try to answer your question?
How I don't know if I can be specific there. So I tried to be in a place where I could sit alone and without distraction, without my shoes, so I could be sort of grounded to the earth. Beyond that, I'm not sure how to answer. So sitting and quiet, my eyes closed, and my hands in a sort of comfortable gesture. I found some like gentle cup sort of together, sort of
Great.
felt good. I don't know how to answer other than that.
Okay, let me ask you then. Were you focused mostly, you said, on your body sensations? Was it mostly on breathing or overall body sensations?
The body sensations were an anchor as I drifted off. So I started with the breath. I tried to be sort of mindful or concerted about being slow and breathing through my diaphragm. But my brain would take over and it would go this way or that way. And so when I caught myself, I would come back and I would think about something. It would be either my breath or a sensation or a sound, but something in the present rather than my mental narrative. And I'm just wondering how best I can sort of stay anchored once I catch myself and then start to think about the thing that is in the present, how to stay there.
Great. Thank you. That's super helpful. So, one thing to consider, and by the way, what you're describing is completely normal. Like I was talking about last week and mentioned this week, this is an exercise in attention training, and it gets stronger. The more often the mind comes back to the present moment, the stronger the capacity comes to direct our attention to the present and eventually to stay there. That said, there are things you can do. We talked just a tiny bit last week about the practice of mental noting, like internally saying rising if your belly is rising, or falling if it's falling, or in on the in breath and out on the out breath. That can be really helpful to give your mind something to do. Our minds are used to thinking all the time, right? And it's not a mistake. That's what minds do, healthy minds, most of the time. So to give it give your mind a little project, in breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. That's the first level. And then I'd like to offer a distinction, and today's class will deepen that distinction. There's a big difference, believe it or not, between thinking about a breath and a body sensation and being with it, experiencing it. So, when we first start out, sometimes just noticing that it happens is a huge win, right? And over time, one of my mentors describes it as like being with the breath or being with the body is like stroking a cat, whereas just thinking about it, contacting it, is like tapping the cat. Now, what does a cat do when you do this to it? Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Ben. Or run away, right? It's not a pleasant response. So to give the kind of, it's like almost like stroking the breath. That's the kind of attention we're giving it, is like to stay in constant contact the way your hand would on the fur of a dog or a cat. Out breath, out breath, out breath, out breath, out breath. Every little sensation, in breath, in breath, in breath, in breath, in breath. You don't necessarily say that, but that's like getting interested in the details helps to keep the mind present. Otherwise, it's like a checklist. Yep, in breath. And then you can go off to the races and think about 12 things before the out breath, if you ever get back to it, speaking for myself early in my practice. So that constant contact. So I hope those are helpful. Just experiment and see how it is for you. Also, a chat from Susan K. Practiced all days, had trouble with mind chatters. Yes, we were just kind of talking about that, right? It's not a mistake or a failing in your practice if you start to notice your mind is chattering. Usually, it just means you're noticing something that's been happening all along, right? So, it's really common when people start mindfulness practice to notice things like distraction and to notice things like, wow, my mind will not shut up. It just keeps going. Mindfulness is not about making that go away, though eventually, with a lot of practice, it will slow down, lighten, even fewer thoughts, fewer unnecessary thoughts. But initially, and sometimes for the first number of years, and really it's a transferable skill set, cultivating that metta level awareness, that capacity to see and observe what's happening while it's happening, that's powerful. It's just not always pleasant in the moment, especially if your mind is anything like most minds. A lot of what we think about is repeats over and over. So just to normalize and return to the moment if you can, when you can. Preferably to something that feels neutral or pleasant, if possible. Any other questions or comments from practice last week? Yeah, Tess. Hi.
I was more motivated at the beginning after this class. So it was easy to get up one morning and sit up and meditate. Then it dwindled. And so I found there were days where I would just lay in the bed. And I remember you saying something about being playful with it a little bit last week. So I played with sound because I heard the owls hooting.
Oh, nice.
So I just cue into that. And then one morning it was like four. I just laid there and just noticed the breathing. At that time, there's not as many thoughts for me.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. So it was a quieter time, and there was very little sound outside. Cars, I couldn't hear cars or sirens or anything like that. So it made it a little easier. And I stayed there, I think, for about 10, 15 minutes and then fell asleep. And then woke up again and went, oh, okay, I must have needed that sleep, like you suggested. So I was able to play with more kindness with myself with that,
Wonderful.
which was really helpful instead of judging or. Oh, I did it so well the other day, but not today. So just having that awareness of ease.
I love hearing this. Yeah. Yay, ease, go ease. Annie, please.
One of the things that I found that helped me, especially in the beginning of my practice, was guided meditations on YouTube. There was a blog of the guy, Jason Stevenson. He really talks, and you can focus on his words, and earplugs are a must because it drowns out all the other noises. You can go to wherever he's taking you, and then you can advance. He goes, as it goes on, he talks less. and less, mm-hmm. and less, and so that you're actually, you know, getting there. And so now when I have a lot of things in my mind and stuff like that, or I'm going to sleep, I'll put the earplugs in or the earphones in and just let them take me to food or whatever. And so it's very common.
Is he teaching mindfulness or giving mindfulness instructions or some other form of meditation?
He just, like, one is floating in space and he just takes you on a story trip to, you know, different things. And he always reminds you to breathe and, you know, focus on your breathing and everything. And his voice, just for me, is just, I hear it and I'm thrilled, I'm there.
Great. And glad you found something that worked for you. Just to make a distinction, what you're describing is more of a guided visualization, it sounds like. And that is great. It is not what I'm teaching in this class. It can be a healthy adjunct for people. So, I mean, I'm very, I don't know what you call it, ecumenical, agnostic. Like, if you find things that work for you as internal resources, please use them. And to make a distinction that it's a little bit different to be guided in that way than it is to be guided in mindfulness meditation, like those 7 a.m. sits over YouTube that Gil Fronsdal offers, typically are mindfulness meditation. So the orientation is just a little different. Like I said, both are fine. And just to start becoming have a discerning palate about what you're picking up and just know what you're picking up. And not that you need to stop picking any of it up, but just to be aware that there are these different gradations within. Meditation is a huge field of practice, as some of us know from having been in other traditions. So any other questions or comments from last week? So also just to say that guided meditations are great. There are handouts, and I only brought last week's handouts this week in printed form. Those and this week's handouts will be available off of the ISC website. If you go under resources to Dharma Talks, there's a link to an audio archive called Dharma Seed. And my talks, these classes are recorded there. Also, there are handouts for each class that you can download as a PDF. And there's a way to do a self-guided meditation on that. Or if it's helpful for you, experiment a little bit, especially if you're newer and 15 minutes is maybe your max or whatever. Once or twice in the week, you can do a guided meditation. It's wonderful to have that as an assist, and it's also really helpful to start cultivating the capacity to ride the bike without the training wheels. Both are good. Both are great. And I know very, very experienced practitioners who still use guided meditations on a tough day, myself included. So there's no shame in it. It's good to develop the ability to do both if you can. Yeah, with that, let's do a guided meditation. The focus here will be on body, like I was talking about before, body, and the body is an alternate to mental commentary. So invite you to find a posture that's a good balance of relaxation and alertness. If you're in a chair, the invitation is to have your feet flat on the floor, legs uncrossed. If you're in another posture, the principle is just to be grounded, balanced. Just starting out by noticing your whole body. What posture are you in right now? Where is your body contacting? What supports it? Noticing these in some weight, solidity, or lightness. Noticing any sense of air against your skin. Warmth or cool on the surface of your body and within your body. And I'm generally noticing overall, is the body relaxed? Is it tense, contracted, soft? Just overall. And inviting the body to relax. May this body relax. And scanning your attention through your body. Starting wherever your feet are contacting the floor or cushion or support. And noticing the feeling of the feet from the inside out. Noticing your legs. Maybe the contact of cloth, clothing on skin. And the sensation inside the legs, from the inside out. Maybe there's pulsing or tingling. Firmness or softness. Moving your attention up through the abdomen and the buttocks, the belly. Noticing sensations. Perhaps sensations of breathing, motion, in your abdomen or your side, body, diaphragm. And if it works for you, rest your attention for a moment or two. In the gentle rhythm of the in-breath and out-breath. Noticing the very beginning of the in-breath. And staying in contact with the beginning, the middle, and then the complete fullness of the in-breath. And noticing the moment that it shifts to an out-breath. Noticing the sensations. Breathing out. All the way to the end of the out breath. It may be helpful to expand the attention to the chest, ribs. Noticing the gentle movement in your core, your torso. And expanding the attention to the arms and hands. The shoulders, back, noticing any aliveness within these parts of the body. Noticing the neck, head, face, softening the muscles in the jaw, the tongue around the ears and eyes, the forehead. Releasing any leftover tension in my next out-breath. If breathing works for you as an anchor of attention, the invitation is to rest there. Hold that in the forefront of awareness. And also to notice other sensations as they come. While staying attuned to the breath, for example, noticing the internal sensations in your left hand. Not the image of your hand, the concept. Internal sensations. And letting go of that and returning the attention to the body breathing. The whole body. If another sensation becomes more interesting or compelling, the instruction is to fully turn the attention to it. Notice it, explore it until it fades away. Then return the attention to a sense of the body breathing. In breath. Fullness. Tingling. In breath. And so on. Just gently internally naming. 90% with the experience, 10% with the naming. You notice the mind chattering, acknowledging that and expanding the attention, grounding the attention into the felt sense of this body. Resting in the breath or the general sensations of simply being here now alive. Oh, I'm really curious what you noticed as you were practicing. Since this is a class, there's no right or wrong. What did you notice when you were there? Anybody get distracted? Yes, remind me of your name. I'm so sorry.
Cindy.
Cindy, sorry. Thanks, Cindy. Wait for the mic, please.
I was really visualizing the space in my chest, circulating the breath.
And how did that feel?
Really good. It was a good focus. I've been doing a lot of breath therapy over the past couple of years, which is incredibly helpful.
Right.
So that really fit right in.
Right. Makes me happy to hear. And you're bringing up something that kind of fits into the theme of this week, which is noticing when something is pleasant or unpleasant, in your case, pleasant, which is wonderful. What an ally that can be to remaining aware, mindful. And it's especially helpful when we find what's pleasant and can tune into it to kind of start to keep us in the present moment a little bit more. And often, if something is unpleasant, and I imagine at least one of you had an unpleasant moment or two in that meditation, noticing that helps the mind keep from skittering away, from going off someplace else. We are so deeply conditioned to avoid the unpleasant and get pulled into the pleasant, that to be able to be nourished by the pleasant, like with the breath, is a real gift, without grabbing onto it, right? And without pushing away. If you had what one of my teachers calls cardboard breath sometimes, it's just like flat. That can be okay too. So thank you very much for bringing that in, Cindy. Anybody else, what'd you notice?
Thank you. Maybe it was just kind of, it seemed like one is like being in the moment, but then things, you know, relationships that are challenging or things that I've been ruminating on in my mind would come back in, and then I would go back to the breath and try to, you know, and then the body sensations as well to try and, you know, come back. But I think throughout that meditation, I found myself kind of moving back and forth between those, you know, two spaces.
I love that you were noticing that. Yeah. So that in itself is mindfulness, noticing discursive thought, rumination, whatever, right? Relationship thoughts, breath, body sensations. And to say that that's completely normal. Even very advanced meditators will go through phases of like, breath, breath, breath. Oh, that person. Breath, breath, breath. Oh, that. You know. And so when you were coming back, what was the attitude? Was it, oh, crap, I lost the breath? Or was it, oh, I'm back, or something else?
I was trying to be, I guess, kind of forgive myself for being kind of wandering away, because I can be critical at times, or why are you doing that, or making those types of observations. So I think more with this, I was just trying to think of it as if I can come back, that's a success. And, you know, coming back and feeling the room and being here.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's fantastic. So we talked about last week, forgive me for reusing this analogy, those of you who were here last week, but like, training our minds is a whole lot like training a puppy. You know, it wanders off. When it eventually comes, when you call it, it's a whole lot more effective to praise it than to whack it on the nose, right? Our minds are kind of like that. So many of us don't find it intuitive to be gentle or kind or patient, but it's even like the mental move I find the most helpful is to actually celebrate that moment of returning rather than being down on myself or even just patient. Be like, oh, that's awareness. And that conditions it to come back more than anything else. And it's just how our neurology works. So, and be gentle with yourself when you can't do it that way, right? So thank you. That's wonderful. Thanks for the share. Anybody else or questions? Anybody have challenges? I felt very relaxed and enjoyed the quiet. Thank you, Libby. And Manny, were you, yeah.
To me, it's like, there's a difference between training and reconditioning. Training a puppy is easy because he doesn't have any preconditions. We're dealing with 50, 60, 70 years of conditioning and that trust of letting go of those thoughts, because those thoughts that I have in my head have been with me for years. And letting it go is for me, that trust is really hard. That's why I like having the guided, because your voice, when I start finding myself back, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, I'm here.
Yeah.
Leave that alone. It'll be there later. I'm here. And this is where I want to be. And then I get back into the relaxing.
Great.
But good. It's that trust of letting go is really hard for me.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. So, of course, it's easier in a lot of ways to train a puppy than to train our complicated, conditioned, hardened, recalcitrant minds. And the attitude is what I'm pointing to, right? That trust. You've been meditating a while now. What keeps you coming back?
Holding on to...
Holding
on to those thoughts is comfortable. It's familiar, even though I don't like it. It's like the tattered old jacket that you used to wear when you're in fifth and sixth grade. You know, why do you keep wearing it? Because you know, even though it's not comfortable anymore, it's familiar.
Right. So that's what helps you keeps you coming back to the thoughts. Mm-hmm. I didn't word my question very well. That's a great observation. I'm curious what keeps you coming back to meditation.
The few seconds, minutes of absolute peace that I have, that's what keeps me coming back, because I want it longer.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I may make a humble suggestion, put your trust in that. Those few seconds of peace, that's very deeply, deeply trustworthy. And it takes time. Like, all of us have been conditioned in this society to trust our mental narrative. You know, I think, therefore I am. It's baked into Western culture. So it does take time. And it's almost like learning to shift your weight from one foot to another. It's like, can our center of gravity gradually shift? Oh, that moment of relaxation. So I can't solve trust for you, but I can invite you into it. Like, to notice. The other thing that really helped me when I was starting out was I noticed that I was a more present person on the days I meditated than the days I didn't. Nothing special was happening on the cushion for me in particular, but I was kinder, more present, more aware, a little less anxious the days I practiced, and that was enough. Like, and it wasn't like it was a huge amount. It was, you know, so an invitation to also put your trust in the process, if you find the process is helping at all for you. And sometimes it helps day by day. Sometimes it helps year by year. Sometimes it helps minute by minute. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, says that you should evaluate your practice regularly, at least once or twice every 7 years. So patience too, right? Okay, I've got another chat here. Andrew, I have a question about emotions. I find myself getting pulled out by a thought or a memory with an emotion attached to it. I try to come back to presence away from the thought part of the memory, but what about the feeling of the emotion? That is a fantastic question, Andrew. So, first of all, emotions, I believe, are next week. They are next week. I'm going to be covering them in detail next week. But meanwhile, it's worth noticing that emotions are kind of a compound phenomenon. There's often a thinking component, as you're pointing to, Andrew. So if a thought is really persistent, really strong, really repetitive, 100% guaranteed there's an emotion under it somewhere, often more than one. So then moving to noticing the emotion is helpful. And the feeling of the emotion is a really great way to say that, because emotion typically has a lot of sensation associated with it. So finding the emotion in your body. Is fear a clench in the chest? Or a tightness in the breath? Is anger heat? Or feeling of power in the legs? And I'm saying some of these. There's a million ways it can manifest for you. Is love, joy, relaxation, a feeling of expansive warmth in the chest or uplift? But just noticing those, and it gets simpler and simpler. So that's the short answer, is move to the sensations and just notice the thought. But since we're doing mindfulness of the body, if you move to the sensations, guess what? You're automatically back in the body. I hope that was helpful. I'm going to talk about another compound experience. By compound, I mean it's got multiple things in it. So for many years, my gig was working as a meditation instructor in a pain clinic. And the number of people who come to meditation because of physical pain is large. I was one of them. I walked in through, we call it the dukkha doorway. The pain, suffering doorway. For many of us, it's mental, emotional. And for some of us, it's mainly physical. But if you got a lot of physical pain, trust me, friends, you got mental and emotional stuff going on too, either because of the pain or that helped to lead to the pain or whatever, right? So the first thing to say about this is that there's been a lot of neurological and psychological research done on pain. And when I say it's a compound phenomenon, that means it literally exists of both the substrata of our thinking and the physical sensations. Both are there. And the studies have shown mental activity can change perceived pain dramatically, for good and for ill. So I'm going to use myself as an example. Some of you already know this. I had a pretty catastrophic injury 20 years ago, roughly, more than that now, that completely changed my life. And I went from being highly functioning to riddled with chronic pain. What I didn't understand was that my response to the pain was amping it up. So every time I looked at the pain, thought about the pain, the mental narrative happening was, this will never go away. I can't find a way to fix this. It's only getting worse. So I had a lot of anxiety. And guess what? Loop. Pain, 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 anxiety, up to the pain. More anxiety, more pain, more anxiety, more pain. It is a discursive, recursive feedback loop, and it stinks. Okay. So the beautiful thing about that is if we notice our commentary about a physical sensation, we have the opportunity to either shift it or disidentify from it, not believe it quite so much. What this often means, conversely, is focusing more on the present moment experience, which can sound really scary if you have a lot of pain. So there's a few ways to deal with that. When I first started meditating, the instruction was to find a safe place in my body that didn't hurt. And I think I found my fingernail and my earlobe. Okay. Whatever it is, if you have a lot of pain in a moment or over time, find one safe place in your body to go, or more than one, if you're, many of us have more than one. And there's an exercise in returning to that, just like returning to the breath, returning to the moment, returning to that to take a break from it. This begins to reprogram our neurology. Because pain is a signal. It's saying, hey, listen to me. Hey, look at me. It's like designed for that. We're alive because of that. But sometimes it gets confused, that signal. Coming back to something else can help break it. The next technique, I'm giving you sort of the off-ramps first, the safety valves first, is to go to sound. Listening to ambient sound in the environment, even sound as subtle as the air purifiers or the fans in this room or the little sounds of the people next door or out on the street, tends to pull our attention outwards. In meditation terminology, that's a more spacious container, a sense of a larger kind of environment. So that can be super helpful for working with pain. And then there's actually working with it. Okay, so classic one, most of us have either knee pain if we meditate long enough, especially if you're sitting on a cushion, less so in a chair, or some other part of the body starts to hurt or get stiff, like back or whatever. Pick your spot. Maybe you got a sore shoulder, you know. So if it's not too strong or if it's unavoidable, noticing the boundaries of the sensation of the pain. Where does it start and stop? Usually there's a diffuse boundary there, unless you've got like a serious, you know, like whack, bruise or something. And to start noticing the edges. And then, if the mindfulness is strong enough, the most powerful way to work with it is to turn directly towards it with your attention. And just like I was encouraging you to notice all of the little sensations in the in-breath and the out-breath, you can notice all of the little sensations within pain. And often, with time, it breaks apart from being this block, this one heavy sensation, to being a bunch of little scintillating point-like sensations or shifting wave-like sensations. And that too can help to start to give some relief. It can also get you really concentrated, by the way. If it feels like too much, the instruction is to move the attention somewhere else. And if you think you're damaging your body, please, by all means, move. Right? I have known more than one meditator, and in fact, I have done it too, who had injuries from sitting these long meditation retreats, 3-4 hour sits. If your body's telling you you've been in one place for too long, notice that. Notice it again. Then move. Right? This is not torture. This is mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Any questions about what I just said or anything that we'd like clarification on before we do another guided meditation? I just threw a lot at you, so there's no dumb questions or comments. Yeah, Cindy.
That was very helpful information. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That is just going on and on and on and on. And we're trying to be mindful of when all of a sudden maybe it's not so sore.
Great.
Most they go, what did I do? Or what didn't I not do? And you hit, okay, and can I repeat that? But mostly just kind of notice when it's at its worst, or it's better, when it's swollen, it's more swollen.
Yeah.
I just been exhausted.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for bringing that in. And I just want to highlight, like, so you're noticing the changes in it over time and noticing the causes and the effects, the conditions, right? You also said something really important that I forgot to mention. You're noticing when it's better. And for some people with chronic pain or like an old injury or whatever, that can totally be the key. So inconstancy is one of the things we're starting to train to notice. And inconstancy can be your friend. If I have the attitude, as I did 20-something years ago, this pain is here all the time, guess what? The pain's there all the time. But if I notice, as you did, oh, it's not here right now. What a gift. And that can be the beginning of a training away from an over preoccupation with it, which is so common for people who have pain a lot. So to notice and celebrate, I say like, appreciate the gaps, mind the gaps, as they say, mind the gap, you know how they say that on the train system. Appreciate those gaps. And you may find you can rest in them and that they grow potentially. Yeah, is there any more? It looks like there might be something else in your mind. As well.
Okay. I was trying to, it's the hardest of getting through the night when it's
somewhere. Yeah.
I'm trying to breathe through that. Like my breath therapy helps so many things.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just, you know, but I feel like it's kind of big, smaller. Through that.
Nice.
I'm not totally being able to rest at full length.
And to name that pain at night is the hardest time because our minds are tired and we don't have the capacity, the executive function of the mind can't work quite as well, kind of by design. I mean, our brains are doing really important things in sleep, right? So one thing to try and notice, the breath is a fantastic place to go. It sounds like you've got that very strongly. Another thing, because it's a compound phenomenon, right? It's the mental and the physical, is to notice the attitude towards the pain. How am I feeling about it right now? So sometimes it's enough just to notice, oh, anxious, or oh, aversive or whatever, and that can give that part of the mind a chance to relax. It also has the effect of taking your attention away from the physical experience itself. So noticing the relationship you might play with. Yeah. Thank you for the comment and the question. I really appreciate it. We have time for one more if anybody wants to chime in. You don't have to. Okay. So we'll do another guided meditation. And please find a comfortable, alert posture, whatever that looks like for you today. Just maybe take a moment to stretch or wiggle or move if there's any part of you. Sometimes talking about pain can actually make the body a little bit tense, right? Yeah, I see some yeses. So just to be kind, any parts of your body that want to move, want to shift, and then settling in. Just noticing You're breathing for a moment or two, really dropping into wherever it's most comfortable to breathe. It can be helpful in trying to invite relaxation, to notice, pay just a little bit more attention to the out-breath than the in-breath. Letting go, letting go, letting go. And resting at the end of the out-breath as long as it's comfortable before an in-breath emerges. Then being settled, the invitation is to expand your awareness outwards to the sounds in the room, little subtle sounds, the sound of my voice. Any sounds that happen to emerge in your environment in the distance or close up. And noticing each sound starts, lasts for a little while or a long while, and then fades away, stops. Allowing the sounds to come to you. If a sensation or a thought, emotion arises, gently acknowledging it, and then returning when you can to this moment, this sound, this gap between sounds. Attending to the silence between the sound, between the sensations. And noticing what arises, persists and changes. And what fades away? Noticing and acknowledging each little sound within a sound. Perhaps noting hearing. Rather than analyzing or thinking about the source or the meaning, or judging, just noticing the texture, the shifts in each sound. Noticing the gaps between them. And if there's a strong sensation, especially an unpleasant sensation, experimenting if it might be okay to notice it. Maybe notice the boundaries around it. They shift or stay static. Are they hard or diffuse? If it feels like too much, moving back to sound or breath from safe space in your experience. And if it feels right, the sensation, any kind of strong or moderately strong sensation, noticing the details of it without judging. Is it heavy or light? Is there heat or prickliness? Burning or stabbing, shifting, stretching. Is it dull or sharp? Static or moving? Like a bolt or like a cloud? It's all okay. Just notice. And when it's no longer predominant, returning to hearing, breathing, and the silence in between. In a moment, I will ring the bell. And the invitation is to notice the beginning of each bell sound, all the little striations and differences within it. And notice. Notice as it fades away, too. Your kind attention tonight. Just want to mention some of the homework, if I can remember it, because I forgot to bring the second week handout. But the key is to keep practicing. If you're doing 20 minutes a day, great, keep doing it. Okay? So that's the first invitation. Keep going. If 15 minutes a day is working for you, do that. And then to really incorporate whatever of these instructions, techniques, work for you in your situation, right? I'm talking about breath, body, sound is hearing. That's a body experience as well. And to notice throughout your day, your posture, once or twice a day, notice maybe how it feels when you're walking versus how it feels when you're standing or sitting. A really easy one I like to do is notice that first delicious moment you get in bed, right? Like, don't waste that. That's good stuff, you know? So just take a moment to notice your body in the different postures. Okay. And then the last instruction, and the handout will be posted on Dharma Seed either tonight or tomorrow morning, accessible off of the Insight Santa Cruz website. And the last instruction reads, notice what pulls you to distractions. And that's great if you want to notice that. If you're a beginner, especially, and even if you're not a beginner, I recommend flipping that instruction too. Notice when you're more aware. Notice when you're more mindful. What helps? What helps? So for me, for example, turning off the podcast or the news when I do the dishes really helps. Like, I've been training. It's good to pick one activity a day to do mindfulness with. And I've been training with dishes for many years. So it's like, if there's nothing else going on and I'm doing dishes, it's right there. So just to find something like that, some mundane activity you do every day, not a thinking-oriented activity. And just notice. So all that's written down. You don't have to remember any of it. But do take advantage of the handout. This recording will also be up there by sometime tomorrow morning, before 10 a.m., I promise. And are there announcements?
Maybe. Just a reminder that it's called the Donna Talk. We have never charged a dime. 35 years ISC have been here, and don't charge for any classes, don't charge for anything. relying solely on generosity. And you have two baskets in the back. One is for the community to keep the lights on and pay the rent, and the other is for the individual teachers who spend a tremendous amount of time doing and putting together these, and we really benefit from them. And want them to stay, so we really help support them. Ellen, if you want to keep more online and keep an offering there, and also volunteering is very important. That's keeps me going, and volunteering, and I get so much out of it, more than I get. So anyway, maybe.
Thanks a lot, Manny. And if you decide you're interested in volunteering, there's a list from our lovely volunteer coordinator of things that are especially helpful right now. And if none of that works for you, just know that I deeply trust you're also giving back through your practice. This is a beautiful thing to do. It's a way of cultivating your own heart and your own mind towards your own healing, awakening, development, and that has a ripple effect in the world. So thank you very much for the gift of your practice. Good night.
Can I ask a question on that?